We are back, and you are listening to The Critical Hour on Radio Sputnik. I'm Wilmer Leon, joined here by my co-host, Garland Nixon.
Thank you, Wilmer.
There's an interesting piece in Covert Action magazine entitled, Stripping Away the BS, U.S. and Russian Threats Over Ukraine, What They're About and Who's the Aggressor. For insight into this, let's turn to our next guest. He's a member of the DSA International Committee's Anti-War Subcommittee. He's the author of My Whirlwind Lives, Navigating Decades of Storms, soon to be published by Guernica World Editions, and he's the author of this piece, Dee Knight. Dee, welcome to The Critical Hour.
Thank you very much. Glad to be with you.
Before we get to your piece, the U.S. says it will refuse all security concessions proposed by Russia. Any agreements between Moscow and Washington must be of mutual benefit, says the State Department. What does this message and the way that the message is constructed, what does that say to you?
Well, it says to me that it's really the United States that's the aggressor, even though, as is often the case in war hysteria, they're making it seem that Russia is the aggressor. You know, the encroachment of NATO onto the border of Russia has been going on now for really three decades, ever since the collapse of the Soviet Union. And in spite of repeated promises by U.S. leaders, both at that time and throughout the 90s, that NATO would not move one inch towards Russia. And the president of Russia, Vladimir Putin, is saying, look, our troops are in our country. Your troops are not. They're on our border. Please get them away. And the United States is taking a very strange position. And it's hard to know why, other than to think that the collapse of the Soviet Union wasn't really enough for the United States. It wants a kind of surrender, just like it did after using NATO to bomb Yugoslavia shortly after the collapse of the Soviet Union. Sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. Go ahead.
No. I agree with you. And let me ask you this. That's a part of it also. I think part of it is this, and I've always felt like this. The U.S. argued its ideology. We hate the Russians because they're communist, and this is a competitive ideology. And the Russians are no longer communist, and they're still the same. That, to me, that proves it was never about ideology. It was about world hegemony. We want to control the world, and they're in the way. But let me ask you this. You very clearly, show in your article, what's going on here, what's the problem, what's the history, et cetera. If I know that, and you know that, and Dr. Leon knows that, then clearly the Europeans know that. Do you think that this, and this is something we've been discussing, I want to get your take on it, that this is going to actually drive the Europeans closer to Russia in that they're going to recognize, you know, we have economic ties with Russia. We don't want a war. We do want to continue to make money, that we're selling them stuff, they're buying stuff. And in a way, it will kind of teach a lesson to the EU, the European powers, that, you know, really Russia's right here and we're working together. And those guys from across the sea are trying to come over and stir up a lot of trouble that we really don't need.
That's very, very close to the truth. Obviously, finding the truth is tricky. One thing we should know is that the European countries, led by Germany and France, are meeting right now in Paris as we speak, in what's called the Normandy format, trying to figure out if they can get the Minsk Accord to be implemented. It's been recognized as the simplest route to peace. It would essentially end the conflict in Ukraine by establishing regional autonomy. You know, Ukraine is a big country, bigger than France, for example, and it's really made up of at least four regions. Two of them are predominantly Russian speaking, and the western half is predominantly Ukrainian speaking and leans to the right and to the west. It's a tough country to govern, and the Minsk agreement would basically establish a federal system that would get the Ukrainian troops off of the Donbass region, where most of the tension is. So the other point to bear in mind is that these European diplomats are meeting among themselves without the United States. And it's interesting to say that Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, seems to think that's the way it should be. He was quoted today in the New York Times. That format is the only platform for negotiations on a peaceful settlement in eastern Ukraine. One other thing I would like to say about the interests of the Europeans, they're freezing to death and they're and they're suffering because of skyrocketing prices for natural gas. The natural gas that they are hoping to get would come through Nord Stream 2, which the United States has been fighting to stop ever since the Trump period. It's interesting to see that the respected senator from Texas thinks that Nord Stream should not happen and the Europeans should get their gas from the United States. Now, in the middle of this war buildup, today's news is that President Biden has announced that the administration is working with sources in the Middle East, North Africa, and Asia to provide natural gas supplies to Europe in the midst of this crisis. It's a little bit suspicious because, as we know, the natural gas supplies that the United States would be providing would be coming from U.S. corporations. We should remember that a lot this war is about energy. The United States wants to control energy supply around the world, and it doesn't want Russia to be supplying the energy to Western Europe. And the Germans have invested heavily in getting the Nord Stream 2 built.
In your opinion, and I know you don't have a crystal ball, but based upon your understanding of history, will we look back at this point in history as a reckoning? You made the point that the U.S., with the fall of the Soviet Union, that wasn't enough. The U.S. wants surrender. Well, the U.S. lost the Korean War, the Korean conflict. The U.S. lost in Vietnam. The U.S. lost in the Iraq War. The U.S. lost in Afghanistan. The United States hasn't been able to fight and successfully declare victory since before I was born, and I'm 62. So
you're a young guy.
So
you still have a chance.
Thank you. I'll take that to heart. So looking at this and looking at what's happening in Central and South America, it looks as though the tide is turning and the folks that haven't gotten the email or read the memo are the United States.
Well, there's a whole thing about that. You know, the neoconservative blob that surrounds Secretary of State Blinken, you know, have been fighting the last war now for about four wars, and they still haven't gotten it right. And part of it is that they tend to kid themselves or lie to themselves, as I put it in the – I was quoting a commentator that basically asks, when will the U.S. stop lying to itself about global politics? That was the question asked by City of New York professor Peter Beinhart, who was taking issue with Secretary of State Blinken's pontification that one country does not have the right to dictate the policies of another or to tell that country with whom it may associate. And he said, by the way, that concept of a sphere of influence should be relegated to the dustbin of history. Beinhardt himself said, well, it's a good idea, but it's not one that the United States abides by. You know, and he pointed to the Monroe Doctrine established back in 1821 when President James Monroe declared that the United States should consider any attempt by foreign powers to extend their system to any portion of this hemisphere is dangerous to our peace and safety. And just in case anybody thinks that that's obsolete, Trump's Secretary of State called it as relevant today as it was the day it was written. And his national security advisor, John Bolton, said the Monroe Doctrine is alive and well. The problem is that the United States wants the world as its sphere of influence, and any country that wants to challenge that is a problem or will have problems. It's worth noticing, though, that French President Macron has made it clear that in Western Europe, the leaders of France and Germany and the other countries in the European Union feel like they should have a say. And of course, they were left out of last week's series of negotiations with Russia. And they're saying, what Macron said is, it's vital that Europe has its own dialogue with Russia. It wasn't part of any of those negotiations. He also said that war in Ukraine or in Russia would be a tragedy. And that he and the leaders of Germany want very much to avoid it happening. It's interesting that the lead articles in today's New York Times were about the problems with the German government not wanting to go along with the NATO program announced by the United States. Both France and Germany, the two largest countries in the European Union, do not want war. They want to do business with Russia. And they know there's a peaceful solution in the Ukraine, and they are sitting down right now to make it happen.
I would interpret the article like this. France and Russia don't want to commit economic suicide, and the United States is angry because they won't put in an economic gun in their mouths and pull the trigger in order for the U.S. to continue with their futile attempt to rule the world. That's the way I see it.
Well, I think that what you said is exactly right. It's an interesting viewpoint that the European leaders have. They seem to be saying, this is our region in the world, and we want to do it our way. We appreciate the United States' interest in our problem, but we have to recognize that our energy problem is something that the United States has messed up numerous times. For example, when it harnessed NATO to bomb Libya. Libya was one of the major sources of oil to Europe. And then it dragged them into Iraq, causing not only major energy problems for Europe, but also stimulating a massive, gigantic immigration crisis. The refugees from Iraq and Syria and Afghanistan didn't go to the United States in any significant numbers, but they sure did to Western Europe. And the leaders of Western Europe now are saying very clearly, thank you, we'd rather do it ourselves.
Dee Knight, thank you so much for your time. Greatly appreciate that analysis. We look forward to having you back.
Well, thank you. I look forward to being back.
Folks, you've been listening to the Critical Hour here on Radio Sputnik. Thank you for allowing our voices into your space. On behalf of myself and my co-host, Garland Nixon, we hope you were informed and enlightened, and we look forward to talking with you all right here tomorrow on Radio Sputnik. Be safe. Peace and blessings. We're out.